listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. We're your hosts. I'm Abby.
And I'm also Abby. We're librarians at the Central Library.
We've just wrapped up our fourth year of producing this podcast, so we want to use this episode to launch a new season with a new focus.
That's right. Our fifth season has a focus on the people of JMRL. Each episode will meet a different staff member and learn about what they do and why they do it.
We think you'll really like getting to know the people who make our libraries work. And to kick off this new season, we're interviewing ourselves.
But before we get to that, as always, we've got book chat. So Abby, could you tell us about your book chat this time?
Sure. I read The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration by Sarah Everts. It's a nonfiction exploration of what sweat is, how it functions, and even its role in society. So she begins with kind of the science of sweat, its purpose and how it functions in humans, how that's different from other animals, what it's made of, and kind of why everybody's sweat smells a little bit different. After she does kind of that science-y, gives us the scientific background, she dives into how it exists in society. And so for that section, she spends a lot of time exploring and learning about different Scandinavian sauna cultures and practices, which was really interesting. She even goes on like, kind of like a speed dating event, but it's, you get matched up with people based on your preferences for each other's body odor. It's really interesting. In the last section, she explores like the history of perfume and deodorant, and she talks about the possible future uses of scent and sweat in criminal investigations and criminal justice, which is really interesting. The whole book is really kind of a ride. I went into it with a few questions that I wanted answers for, and I came out of it with answers for questions I never would have thought to ask, which was kind of cool. It's a great kind of like micro history on sweat. So if you really love a deep dive into a fairly narrow topic, this is exactly perfect for you. I learned things about sweat that I didn't know were actually things about sweat. You know what I mean? For instance, one thing that I found really interesting was, did you know that fingerprints are just essentially sweat? Like, that had never occurred to me. But yeah, so lots of fun little like tidbits like that that really left me thinking and kind of just questioning our whole, like, the way we interact with sweat as a society, you know, how we try to hide it, or it's sort of this taboo thing that's just an essential bodily function. But it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Having read this book, will it affect your life moving forward at all?
Yeah, you know, I think I will. One of the things that was really interesting is she talked about some of the studies they've done on antiperspirants and deodorants and those chemicals and heavy metals entering the bloodstream. And because, you know, there's been talk about whether aluminum is really bad for you when you use it in antiperspirants. And what was interesting is in some of the studies, it was like, there's not a significant amount that gets absorbed through your skin unless you have like freshly shaved your armpit and there are lots of tiny nicks. And in which case there's like a huge amount that you absorb. And so it can like actually have an effect. So, you know, it might be time to really hang up the antiperspirants for good, you know, maybe just go with deodorant. Yeah, it was interesting. The bit about saunas too made me really miss spending time in a sauna, just because with COVID, I feel like I don't know that I'll ever go back in a sauna. What did you read?
A book that wrecked me. I describe it as an emotional avalanche for me and for many. The book is titled PAX, Journey Home. It's by Sarah Pennypacker. And this is a sequel that was never really intended to be, but the characters just kept holding on to the author. So I need to ask you, Abby, have you ever been reading and then you were just forced to stop because you couldn't go on reading unless you flipped to the end and kind of figured out if X, Y, or Z was going to happen, like if the character was going to live or if they were going to be successful, or you just felt like you couldn't move on unless you had that clarity?
I know that feeling, but I am also unwilling to ever spoil it for myself. So I've definitely had to take a break from a book just to go have like an emotional meltdown and then had to quickly read the rest of it as fast as possible. But
yeah, I'm like you. I hate spoilers. I never even watch trailers for movies. I just want to go in and experience it. But this book, and I will just say here that this is a children's book. So how children are emotionally mature and just strong enough to handle this is amazing. But I got to a point where I just could not continue unless I found out if something happened. So I did what I never do, and I had to flip to the end. But even having flipped to the end, it was a wonderful book. So I'm going to give a gist of the plot for anyone who might need that. And I'm going to try to not spoil the first book, which is just titled Pax by Sarah Pennypacker. So it's a dystopia children's novel. It's set in an ominous, undated future. And we have two main characters, Peter, who's a young teen, and Pax, who is his former pet fox. And they tell their own stories in alternating chapters. So Peter is working through a lot of grief and a lot of trauma from his childhood. And he's finding some solace in this book in something called the Water Warriors, which is an organization that has emerged from the society because the society has been plagued and totally poisoned the water sources because they've just ended this unnamed war. Pax, in the meantime, the fox, he's on a journey to keep his new family safe. He's trying to locate a new home because he's lived through this war, which of course was devastating for animals. Pax has a mate named Bristle, and they've just welcomed three little baby kits into their family. So those three foxes, those three babies, really provide a lot of sweet relief from the dark overall atmosphere of the book, because it is a bit of a heavy book for kids, like I've said multiple times now, but it's also amazingly beautiful. So now I'm going to just talk briefly about what makes these books, and I say books plural to include the first one, so exceptional. So I think it's that it's really a commitment to the animal characters, because Pax, the fox, is what makes it so unique and so different. And it goes beyond just anthropomorphism, where, you know, the fox is like a human. I think it's that Pennypacker was inspired by the idea of non-duality, which is explicitly mentioned in both books. So I pulled a quote from the first book in which the concept is first introduced by one of the adult characters who acts almost as a mother figure for Peter. And she comes back in the second book too. This is Vola. She says, "Non-duality is about oneness, about how things seem to be separate, but they are really connected to one another. There are no separations. This is not just a piece of wood. This is also the clouds that brought the rain, that watered the tree, and the birds that nested in it, and the squirrels that fed on its nuts. It is also the food my grandparents fed me that made me strong enough to cut the tree, and it's the steel and the axe I used, and it's how you know your fox." So it's just a really neat, like, that's her definition, I guess, of non-duality, but that idea is threaded throughout it. It's a single infinite reality from which we all derive. And that really honors the fox characters, which makes the story sing because they have their own arcs. Pax the fox, he's not just an adorable little interlude, but they are full-fledged characters. They have their own everything. So it's just amazing. They're complicated, just like the humans are. Great positive messaging. It would be hard to really pick the perfect age range because, like I said, it's heavy for a children's book, but there's great messaging about respecting nature, animals, the environment, a lot of positive messages about peace and like the impact of war. It was a great book. I can't wait until my own daughter, who is only one right now, but when she grows up a little bit, I want her to read these books because they're great.
I remember reading the first one and just being blown away. And I think part of that was I have this, you know, bad habit of putting books on hold, forgetting what they're about and refusing to read the jacket before I open it. So I was just like, oh yeah, this is the book about the fox. And I've forgotten that there was this like very heavy, dark war in the backstory. Yeah, she is an incredible storyteller. And I think you really nailed what makes it so, so special. I haven't read the second one yet. But
I will say, though, that the first book actually made me cry tears, and this one did not.
Okay.
So in a way, I was grateful for that because it was not too overwhelming. I had to cry.
Do you think that if you had not skipped to the end, the emotional impact would have been a little more?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know if I could have kept reading. It was just,
wow.
Because I can't say what it was, but one of the characters was in danger. And I just thought, if this character dies, it's going to be hard for me, because not only will I mourn that character, but I will also mourn the loss of that character in relation to the other characters. Like, I knew the other characters were going to be so sad, and I loved every single character, that I wasn't just going to miss the character that died. I was going to feel it for the other characters who loved that character. It's just like the first book. People say it wasn't a happy ending. Well, it's to be debated.
So again, your books were Pax and Pax the Return.
Pax Journey Home. Yep.
By Sarah Pennypacker. And I read The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration by Sarah Everts. Next up, we'll offer a little bit of behind-the-scenes insight from our own perspectives. Are you ready, Abby?
Yes, let's do it. Okay, so Abby, time to kick off our next segment of our new season, which is interviewing the JMRL staff. One thing that inspired us to do this was a quote by Timothy Healy. He was the former president of New York Public Library. And he's quoted as saying, "The most important asset of any library goes home at night, the library staff." So we thought it might be neat to get to know library staff. We're going to start with ourselves. Abby, what do you do and why do you do it?
This is both a great and terrifying question to try to answer. So my role is a reference and adult services librarian in the reference department of the Central Library, which is a role that you also have, I know. Before I was in this role, I was a reference and adult services librarian at the Northside Library. I was there when the library moved from its old location in Albemarle Square over to the new building. And before that, I was a substitute in the Central Library's circulation department. And so I was there while I was in library school. So I was at the desk where you check out all of your books. That's what the circulation desk is, if you've not heard that term before. So in my role as a reference and adult services librarian, there are kind of three big overarching spheres. One is programming. We develop and facilitate programs for adults. So those are just free events for the public in our buildings, sometimes with partners, sometimes offsite, but everything, every event that you ever see the library putting on, that's put together by people like us. Another big part of our job in our department specifically is that we do a lot of virtual reference work. So what that means is, if you ever go to ask a librarian where you can chat or text or email the library, you're emailing our department. So we answer those questions, or we refer you to, you know, another staff member who can better answer those questions. We also do something called Reader's Advisory, which is where we help you find the next book that you want to read. And we talked about What Do I Read Next on one of our recent episodes. And that's just a short form you fill out, and then we give you a list of books you might like. So those are two of the spheres. And then the third one is just in-person public service. So we sit at the reference desk. We spend about half our day actually at the reference desk, where we take your phone calls, we help you in person. You might have questions about how to use a computer, you might need help finding a book, you might have a reference question, all sorts of things. So that's kind of an exciting place to be. We just do all sorts of things. That's really, I think, what people think of when they think of a reference librarian, somebody who sits at that desk and helps you find the information that answers the question you have. But outside of just those three spheres, you and I share another responsibility that is unique to the two of us, and that is producing this podcast. So I have been producing the podcast since we began 4 years ago. I helped create it with a former colleague and have since hosted with, you're my third co-host, my first co-Abby co-host though. So groundbreaking for us. Why I do it is a fun question. I think there are a lot of different reasons working together that caused me to end up in libraries. And one of those is that I think deep down, I am a practical person with very impractical interests. So I was graduating from college with a liberal arts degree and realized after having worked in the library in undergrad that if I go to library school, I am qualified for a very specific job. And there was something very appealing about that, to know that there was a direct path to a job. And I wasn't really willing to do something, another kind of professional degree. You know, I wasn't willing to do business school or law school or anything like that. Libraries, that made sense to me. I love the way that libraries at their best can be like a transformational community resource. I love the ability that we have to be an asset to our communities just by showing up to work, really. It's like a very practical and quiet way to benefit our neighbors. So that drew me in for sure. But combined with the ability to go to school and know that I could get a job afterwards, which is not true for a lot of other kinds of grad school, I think. So those things drew me in.
And I think when you ask me, you'll hear that I have some similar answers as well to those first two questions. But I think this next one will probably be different for both of us. You talked about the big spheres of what we do, which was great. This third question is, what is an exciting project that you're currently working on?
So one of the things that I work on is the Same Page Community Read, which every March we try to get everybody to read the same book in our entire service area. If it's not a book geared toward younger readers, then we have, you know, an alternative for younger readers that we can recommend. And I get to lead that committee. And I've been doing that for at least the last 5 or 6 years, which I love. I would love to be able to announce our 2022 author pick right now, but that's not out yet. We hope to be able to announce that in November. That's a big thing that's coming up. I know it feels like it's still several months away, but for us, this is the time when we really start planning that and putting it into motion. So that's the big thing that I'm excited about, and that I always kind of have going on in the background of whatever else I'm doing, is figuring out, you know, who our author's going to be, how we're going to get those books to people, and what kind of associated events and programs we can do to make people feel really invested in the book. And if you're not familiar with Same Page, what's exciting about it is we work with the Virginia Festival of the Book to bring the author of our book to the community so that we can do a Meet the Author event. You know, last year it was, or rather this year, this spring, it was virtual, and it will likely be virtual next year, which has its pros and cons. Obviously, we would love to have them in person and get to really, really kind of interact in that way. But when it's virtual, literally everyone in our service area has the opportunity to watch this event or to participate in some way, in a way that just due to room capacities, we couldn't possibly do in person. So excited to be able to announce who that is in the next month or so.
I was hoping that you were going to talk about Same Page, because it's also an example of something that we do that's very big picture and also long-term and big scope, because I think people see us sitting at the desk doing a lot of instant gratification or instant transactional services, which are a huge part of our job and something that I really love to do for sure. But planning something that happens once a year, that's a huge event, you know, that you work on all year long, that's another big part of our job too. So I love that you talked about that. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, it's neat to be able to work on things that have such varied kind of timelines and focuses. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that it's like this thing that's coming that's 9 months away. It's cool to be able to kind of shift focuses like that. But yeah, Abby, what about you? Can you tell us what you do and why you do it?
Sure. So I'm not going to repeat what you said about the three spheres. I think you did that really well, just as our basic job description. I'll just briefly touch on a couple things that I do myself. And I should also note for our listeners that I'm still relatively new to the Central Library. I've only been here for 1 year now. So I'm still kind of, and of course, all of it has been in the pandemic. So I'm still finding my footing and finding what areas are really my own. But a few that I've taken on, one is that I help with eating, otherwise known as deselection or withdrawals. So this is a way that our department helps maintain the collection, the print collection. We work downstairs in the basement with the nonfiction books, and we don't do much purchasing or suggesting for purchasing of the new books because that's for our collections team. But we do work on going through the books that we do have on the shelf and looking to identify if any of them need to be taken off. Because it's been shown that as a person coming into the library browsing the shelf, if the shelf is overcrowded, completely crammed with a bunch of books, you're going to not want to take any out. You're going to have a tougher time finding what you need, and it's not going to be as attractive to you. So we look for old books, outdated books, books that are in poor condition, or books that haven't gone out in a long time, because we are a public library. So a big part of our mission is to provide books that you really want to read day in and day out. We're not an archive, so we don't need to keep every single book. Go through different criteria to take some of the books off the shelf so that we can put new books on. And we're actually involved in a sustainable shelves program with our vendor, which is great, because now the books that we take off, if they don't go to our friend's book sale, they can go to the sustainable shelves program, and that works to either resell the book in a different venue or to be responsibly recycled. So that's exciting that we just started getting involved in that. And then the other thing that I've taken on that I enjoy doing is a bit of writing and research work for the department. So I'm in a few book clubs and I write blog posts for our blog, which if you're not familiar, we do have a blog. And right now it mostly contains posts about book clubs. So you can read about books, you can read about book club discussions, but we post about other things as well. So that's a great resource to check out. And as far as why I do it, so my why for being a librarian has definitely grown. I've actually wanted to do this since I was a kid. And when I was a kid and a teenager, I was super attached to this very beautiful, idyllic idea of the library, which is free and open to the public. And that phrase is on my mind, of course, because it's the title of Lorenzo's new documentary about our library, the 100 years of JMRL history. So I saw that idyllic essence of that space, which could be flawlessly inclusive, perfectly welcoming. You know, I walked into the old Northside Library that you used to work in, just hopped on the computer, or I hopped into a craft class, and then I got to actually take something home for free that I then returned, or if it was a craft, I got to keep forever. So I just loved that about it. And as I've kind of grown and now I work as a librarian, I'm still super attracted to that idea, but I found more reasons to love the job, both big and small. So small day-to-day things are, you know, I love the customer service interactions. I like the moments when I know that I've helped make someone's day easier. And thankfully, we have those multiple times a day, which is great. And then big picture, I've learned more about the core values of the library and our JMRL, our mission statement, our values, our history. And I also have seen some of the things that I didn't see as a kid, you know, so it's, we don't do everything perfectly. You know, there's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of complications, there's a lot of rules, there's a lot of debate about what to do or how to do it. And even if we're all on the same page, it doesn't always work out perfectly in any way. But in a way, that's what keeps me going, because I like to think that we have something to strive for. It's kind of like you said in your talk when you said, when the library is working at its best. So we're striving towards that best. So I don't do it because the library is perfect or because we're perfectly inclusive or perfectly welcoming. We have a lot of work to do, but the opportunity is really what makes it exciting and what makes it meaningful and What makes it feel like it has a purpose?
I'm glad that you talked about weeding or deselection. I think that's something that is like almost shrouded in mystery to the general public. Like you know, everybody I think that pays attention to libraries knows that we're getting in tons of new books constantly. And they're just, we don't have infinitely expanding shelves. You know, our buildings don't, we don't have like a Hermione Granger's purse for a building, right? It doesn't just keep expanding to fit whatever we have. So weeding is actually a really hugely important aspect of what we do. I think there's something kind of terrifying the first time you have to deselect a book and remove it from the collection and wonder if you've made the wrong choice. But
oh yeah, mm-hmm.
When it comes to especially nonfiction, I mean, a lot of what we're removing, like it's just not relevant anymore, or it's been superseded by, you know, whatever new information has come out. So it could also just be like a cookbook that's got, you know, whatever kind of sauce smeared on the pages. And like, you don't want to bring that home.
No, exactly. So there are ideological reasons, there are, you know, condition reasons, and it's all good. You know, books come in and sometimes books have to go out too. So.
Excellent. And so what are you excited for that you've recently done or that's coming up for you?
Oh yeah, sure. So an exciting project that I'm working on getting started is called community journaling. So I did not come up with this idea on my own. I saw it, a different library system do it, but the gist is this: we're going to have a dozen or so journals that have different themes. Maybe one is pep talks or poetry or childhood memories, coping with COVID, you name it. You check out the journal that you're interested in, just like you would a library book. But then you have the opportunity to read what others have written, and you can contribute to it yourself, either anonymously, or you can write a little bio, your name, something about you. So my hope is that we can reach a huge number of people all through our service area, and that we can collect a lot of different voices and stories. So I have the journals, but we haven't gone through all the tech services processing of getting them barcoded and getting them ready, but it shouldn't be too long before they start circulating. So hopefully you will be able to see relatively soon some journals that you can read and write, and we can build this community journaling idea.
Very awesome. I love the idea. You're in conversation with your neighbors who you may never actually meet in person, but your words are interacting in an interesting way. So I love that idea. I can't wait till those go live. That was fun. I love getting to know more about why we do what we do.
Definitely fun. It's great to just refine our focus and remind ourselves of what we're doing and why we do it. Mm-hmm. And we're excited to interview more people from week to week. We also decided that after each interview, we would share a fun fact about our interviewee's branch or department. So today we're going to share something about Central, because we both work here. The Central Library used to be a federal building and has housed both a post office and a courthouse. In fact, the large meeting room on the third floor, the Swanson Case Courtroom, was the courtroom where Gregory Swanson won his case to be admitted to UVA Law School after being denied admission due to his race as a Black man. His was one of the cases that was later used to underpin the Brown versus Board of Education decision by the Supreme Court.
Yes, it's very cool. I remember learning about that and being excited to know that had happened in this building. And we recently installed a few historical panels on the third floor. One series of panels traces the history of JMRL, and then there's one in the room itself that highlights the Swanson case in the room where it was tried. So it's kind of exciting to spend so much time working in a space that has that kind of historical significance.
This podcast was made possible through the generous support from the Friends of the Library. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, please head to their website at jmrlfriends.org. Please hit subscribe wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast. If you have books that you'd like us to read and discuss, or topics that you'd like to hear on a future episode, please email us at podcast@jmrl.org.
That's all for us today. We'll be back soon with more content to introduce you to more of our colleagues. Thanks for tuning in, and we're glad to be
on the same page.